Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 529. It's the 11th of July, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Hanno Pengelly, Chief Development Officer of Nkandezi Energy, that's NCCL, who believes and explains why they're on the verge of a transformational period for the company. Also on the podcast, small cap authority, Doc Holliday talks about Tellu Energy, Stratman Global, ASA Resources, and Sound Energy. Also, I have private investor, the Mad Stork. He talks about the following companies: Canadian Overseas Petroleum, Kefi Minerals, Petropavlovsk, Rango Resources, Norican Gold, BHP Billiton, British American Tobacco, and Royal Dutch Shell. And today's penny stock with potential is suggested by Tony G. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that company is Thor Mining. I will tell you exactly why Terry G thinks this company has potential in a few minutes' time. I say a few, probably about 20 minutes. I also have today's buys and sells as according to the brokers.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Hanno Pengelly, Chief Development Officer of Nkandezi Energy. That's NCCL. Current share price 3.63. Market cap just over 9 million. Hanno, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate you having me on the call.
That's all right. First and foremost, thank you for coming on. You've had quite a few requests to come on the podcast, and I've got to apologise. I may have got some of my pronunciation wrong. First of all, your name and the name of the company. So it is Nkandezi, is it?
That's correct.
Okay, and your name is Hanno.
It is Hanno, yes.
Good. We're starting off on the right feet, dear Hanno. Okay, so first and foremost, for people not aware of your company, could you explain what you're all about there, please, Hanno?
Yeah, sure, with pleasure. Nkandezi is a power development company. We are located in a very strategic part of southern Africa in the Tet province of Mozambique, which is an established energy generation hub that supplies power into both the Mozambican power grid, but also into all the other major power-consuming countries within the southern African region, the largest of which is South Africa. And we are looking at developing a 300 megawatt coal to power project that will supply its power, the first phase of its 300 megawatts into the Mozambican grid for Mozambican demand. And what's important about this project is that it is based on existing demand that is there today that currently cannot be met by a stable supply of power. And it's utilizing existing transmission infrastructure. And, you know, we have already got the project to a fairly advanced stage in that we have been developing this project since 2000, or at least the power side of things, since as early as 2012. The mine development started as early as 2007. And we're now at a very advanced stage. We've completed all the feasibility work on both the mine and the power plant. Our environmental social studies are all completed and approved. The land access rights for both the power plant, the mine, the transmission line that connects into the main part of the grid, as well as all the related infrastructure around both the power plant and mine, have all been granted by government. So we really are at an advanced stage. The Mozambican utility, Electricity to Mozambique, or EDM, has committed to be the 100% off-taker of the first 300 megawatts. And we've gotten to a stage of development where we've already agreed a power tariff, and that power tariff has confirmed the economics of the project. And that was further emphasized and confirmed by the commitment by one of China's largest power utilities, a group called Shanghai Electric Power, which is part of a Chinese utility group that operates over 100,000 megawatts of power, excuse me, which is more than the African continent, by the way, has committed to become our joint development partner to help us finalize the development of the power plant project. But most importantly, it's going to bring 60% of the equity to fund the project at under construction, and it will also bring all the debt. And it will also be responsible for actually operating the power plant, because as I'm sure you can imagine, these are fairly big pieces of kit that require significant technical expertise to run. And so they will be bringing all of that experience. And I think that's a huge endorsement of the project and its level of development. So we're very excited at the moment. And we're on the pathway to getting all of this finalized during this quarter, at which stage the Chinese will actually start funding up to $25 million to basically close out the power project.
Wow, do you know, I have no more questions. You covered it all off. No, you've done really well there, Hannah. So okay, so we've got here, you've got the asset here, you've got this power plant happening, you've got domestic demand, you have a agreement from the Mozambique government, and there's a deficit of power in the area there. So, and the last RNS that came out was the discussions between the Shanghai Electric Power Company and Mozambique. So what's all that about? What were they signing there? What was the deal going on there? What's happening?
Okay, so they were signing the shareholders agreement term sheet, which forms part of the agreement that we signed with them in January, the joint development agreement we signed with Shanghai Electric Power. This was just one of the key conditions precedent towards the agreement becoming effective. I think what's important here is this could have been signed in Shanghai or London, but it wasn't. It was, Shanghai Electric Power wanted to sign this in Mozambique. They sent their top two representatives, both the chairman of the company and the deputy chairman, to be present, along with a delegation of another 20 people. And it was signed in the presence of both the Ministry of Energy, the Ministry of Finance.
I think someone's calling you there. I can hear something going on there. Sorry. That's it. Sorry. Carry on, Hannah.
Sorry. So we were meeting, we met with, the signing ceremony was held in front of the key ministries who will be responsible for executing the power contracts between the power plant and the government of Mozambique, which is really the Ministry of Energy, the Ministry of Finance, and what they call the Center for Promotion of Investment. And in addition to that, we had the Chinese ambassador also present at the signing ceremony. So really what it was a very clear message from all key stakeholders involved in the project to demonstrate that everyone was very serious about taking this project forward, both from a Mozambican government perspective, from a Shanghai Electric Power perspective, but I think also very importantly, from a Chinese government perspective. As I say, they had a representative who was there at the ceremony. And really what this points towards, and what we think the investors can take comfort from this, and that, this is a company that's very serious about closing a deal with Nkondezi, and we're on the right tracks towards finalizing this thing.
Yeah, so, timeline-wise, how long do you think this will take now to be, signed, sealed, delivered pretty much?
Well, the key outstanding items that we need to finalize are the establishment of a company in the UAE. This is a Mozambican government requirement. This will be the SPV that holds the power project. And that's just a paperwork process that we're going through at the moment. We're hoping to have that done before the end of the month. And the final piece is formal government approval. And again, what I've emphasized to investors here is that, this is not the first time the company is going for approval on the project. There have been many informal approvals already given by government to allow SEP to get as far as they have gotten to. It is a state-owned entity. It would never have been allowed to sign binding documentation, spend money in country, and certainly not send their most senior executives to Mozambique to sign things. Or have the ambassador of China present if this didn't already have in principle support from China. So the big thing is the Chinese government approval. We're told that takes up to 2 months to complete. And we're hoping to have that done, as I say, before the end of the quarter.
Okay. So if this all goes ahead, for people who haven't read the backstory here, what is the potential here for Nkondezi? What's the potential upside here?
Well, the potential upside is massive. What we're looking at here is power projects in principle, they're very well understood things, and particularly in Africa, where everyone understands there's a deficit of power, the need for these new power plants to come in, meet this demand. But you have some key risks associated with these types of projects, and namely, it's a funding risk. I mean, this is a $1 billion investment, and we make no bones about the fact that we are a £10 million market cap company. We're not going to go out and raise the money to fund a $1 billion investment. at our current market cap. So there's a massive funding issue with these types of investments. The deal with Shanghai Electric provides that they will bring the bulk of the equity and 100% of the debt to fund this thing. So most of the financing risk has been removed. There are also dilution provisions in our agreement, which says that in a worst case scenario, should we not be able to raise the money, you know, we will be diluted down to a minority holding. So in a way, the project, you know, you could say the project has now become fully funded. So investors are investing into a project which is a fully funded $1 billion project, of which, you know, we will hold somewhere between 20 and 40% of, which is a significant multiple on our existing market cap. And the other key risk with these projects is operational risk. These things require, you know, serious expertise in actually construction as well as operation. The construction team will be over 2,000 people. The operations team, 250 specialized people in operating a power plant. And with, you know, one of China's largest utilities as our partner, you know, they are bringing in all of that technical and operational expertise to help actually deliver and operate this thing, which should provide investors with comfort. And as you can imagine, it provides government with a lot of comfort that this is the right project to back.
Yeah, marvelous. Well, listen, if anyone needs any more convincing, Hanno, could you give us, you know, three reasons as a summary as to why investors should put Nkondesi Energy on their Vox Markets watch list, please?
Okay, that's very easy. The first is this is an advanced project. Its economics are confirmed. It has a clear timetable to delivery. We're looking at closing the Chinese deal in September, in Q3. We are looking at closing out all the financing by this time next year. The second point is that we have probably the best partner that one can have with respect to actually delivering the project in Shanghai Electric Power, who will be bringing the financing as well as the operational expertise. And the final piece to that is, as I say, we've been operating for a while now. We have the track record of delivery, as well as the management team that is geared to deliver, which I think makes us very unique compared to other power development projects in the region.
Marvellous. Well, you know, exciting times ahead, Hanno, and please keep us updated here on the Vox Markets podcast. I look forward to speaking to you again in the near future.
Thank you, Justin, and certainly do so from my side too.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Small Cap Authority, Doc Holliday. You're right, Doc?
Morning, Justin. How are you today?
I'm all right, yes. Look at the markets. They started off positive. They've come back a bit, in fact, including Tulu Energy, which was up 10% today, up 30% on ASX. And now they're back looking at it now this morning. They've gone back to 2%. But, you know, there's good things ahead for this company, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you and I had spoken to them for a bunch of different reasons. One of the things that interests me about Colm Clunan is, you know, he's one of the very few people that can outgun me at speaking. You know, I mean, that guy does know how to talk, so I'll talk to him for that. But, you know, the fact that he discussed the value of some of the business, the fact that they were looking at using recurring revenues to grow the business, and one of the, I think, most profound and boldest statements I've heard for a long time from Colm was that he believed that the company wouldn't be raising any more cash, and that buyers in the market, if they wanted to get involved, would be the only route. And I'm sure, as a consequence, if that is the case, then this can only go one way. They were going to look to build a 10 megawatt power plant. They've got permissions for 50. You know, will they build one big plant? Probably not. They'll probably build a bunch of small ones and use the revenue stream from one to pay for the other. It's quite sensible. And then look to expand the business that way. But it certainly seems to be in a pretty good place. IPO'd at 6.5p, as you know. So, you know, you're only just about back to the IPO level. Australia would suggest we should be trading at 7 to 7.5p. But perhaps there's a little bit of cash in the London markets that, you know, wants to you know, move on. I felt it was a big buy at 3.3p. I talked a bit about it over on Twitter and in some various other areas. And yeah,
right. It is what it is. Take me through another stock I've seen you tweet about, ASA. I don't know much about them. There's a bit of noise on Twitter. I know Baron, our mutual friend on Twitter there, Baron, he's into them. What are they all about?
Yeah, I mean, look, ASA was formerly a company called Moana Africa, I think, or MWA. They've basically got gold and nickel assets. The company was run by a different management team. I think the shares were trading about a couple of years ago now, about 1.5p. Baron and I had a long and lengthy discussion about this company. He gave me the kind of buy case fundamentally. His rationale was absolutely spot on, and actually his call was absolutely spot on, and I was wrong. I felt that the company was typically set up out in Africa with an African board and didn't seem to have much interest in the London markets other than the fact that they'd got access to capital. I felt it all seemed a little bit kind of uncertain to me. I think Baron had a different view on things. He took a very meaningful position back then. I think this was back 2014, 2015, and the shares went up by about 170%. He's sort of flagged it up again, and I guess, you know, I'd be a fool to ignore it. I think he's spent a lot of time crunching the numbers. I think the gold looks quite healthy. Nickel's been, performing well as regard base metals. It's not... As with gold and many other metals, it's not performed particularly well for quite some time. But the road to recovery seems to be on. The only thing I would say, I guess, is ultimately since Baron made that call, the shares have come off quite considerably. There's been fundamental changes. The board's changed. The company's changed its name. They still retain the gold assets. They still retain the nickel assets. And they're producing. So what you're going to find is the production and the revenue that the company are going to be able to get in is going to more or less start paying back pretty rapidly. And I think when it's got to this level, it suggests that people perhaps want to take a bit of a punt. There's obviously been a seller there. It's quite a distressed stock. I think the rationale to buy at this level seems to be quite good on a risk reward basis. I've chucked a little bit at it, not a great deal. I know obviously there's quite a number of people within social media that are really getting revved up about it now, and I think they've got a good reason to. That's the story as I understand it.
Yeah, I'm just looking at something else that's quite getting a bit of attention on Twitter, and you just mentioned it before we came on here. Stratmin Global, STGR, selling, what are they selling? Their graphite mine in Madagascar for $15.25 million. So their market cap at the moment,
I mean, look, this is a company that when it came to market, I think it came to market at about 50 pence. It could have even been 60 pence. It was heavily tipped by Tom Bulford and Red Hot Penny Stocks, or whatever the site was called, Red Hot Penny Shares. And I remember actually when I first started writing about companies for ADVFN and Tom at the Share Profits and one, you know, few other different outlets, I thought I was really, really clever. Tom Bulford had tipped it at 60p, shares traded up to 70, then they collapsed down to 30p, and I thought, ooh, this is a great little opportunity to prove Tom Bulford absolutely wrong, and I wrote about it at 30p. Well, how wrong was I? And what a mess the company kind of proceeded to become. One of the only kind of concerns I'd got was the one particular guy, I think he was the managing director at the time, that was on the management team. I think I even mentioned it in the article that was my only concern, and that was because the business he'd been in before hadn't particularly performed well. Fast forward, a couple of years, shares are trading at 2p. They've just announced that they're going to divest their assets in Madagascar for 15.2 million Australian dollars or 8.8 million pounds. And that's going to come as a cash lump sum, some equity and royalties in the business. It's trading at sort of £2.5 million. You could probably argue that there's as much cash coming in off this deal to warrant the market cap. The fact you've then got royalty payments and equity in another business. The fact that you've got rid of the kind of management team that were quite clearly inept given the price action over the last few years, I think that's the buy case for Stratemann, and that seems to be why people have picked up on it today. It's not been a great performer over the years, and there's been a lot of promise and very little delivery. I think it needs to go in a new direction. It's certainly, you know, setting up that that's going to be the case. Be interesting to see what's coming in. Be interesting to see, you know, is it going to be another one of these fintech, medtech kind of companies that seems to be quite in vogue in the markets right now? Who knows? I guess that's the testament of time, and we'll have to wait and see. There's obviously a fair bit of uncertainty and risk attached to anything on AIM where we don't have any clear direction. But having said that, it's the assets and the company were IPOing at 4 or 5 times the value today, and if they're going to get sold off, then surely the company's in better shape with £15.2 million worth of assets.
I'll ask you for another stock in a minute, any stock you want. But it's quite a complex structure payment here. So I'm looking at it here. It's cash payment of 1.5 million Aussie dollars, equity payment of 8.75 million Aussie dollars in shares from Bass Metals, 750,000 worth of Bass shares at price of 0.01. It keeps going on. 3 million worth of Bass shares upon achieving production output, 5 million worth of Bass shares upon achieving production output, and a net smelter royalty 2.5%. So it's quite a complex tiered deal.
So you keep it simple, don't you? It's cash. Cash, it's equity, and it's royalties. Some of those royalties may never come. It may never get to the, you know, to production. It may never get to certain kind of milestones. There's some cash coming in. There's some equity coming in that's got an intrinsic value straight away. And then there's going to be some royalties. I would pretty much say that that the first lot you can expect as a given. So the equity and the cash is going to be a guaranteed, and the rest of it is subject to the company progressing those assets.
Yeah. Okay. Harald, one more stock, Doc, of your choice that you think is worth putting on our Vox Markets watch list.
All right, the watch list. So you've got me with that watch list word, haven't you? I mean, look, this is a company that I've talked about for a long, 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 long time. So it's not something that perhaps I'm saying, you know, I want you to put on your watch list, but it's definitely a company that should be mentioned, and that's Sound Energy. It should be mentioned because it's a company that traded up at about £250 million market cap back in 2011. There was a lot of speculation and excitement based around its Italian portfolio. They got some really, really kind of big potential prospects up in northern Italy. And at that point in time, the fiscal terms on the gas were absolutely insane. So, you know, it was a company that really did get going well. The collapse of Rab Capital back in 2011 weighed heavily on a number of companies throughout AIM, and sadly for Sound, they had a massive, massive kind of exposure perhaps to them as an investor. The shares absolutely tumbled, got down to about 4 and a bit pence once it consolidated, so the equivalent to 4.5 pence in today's money. And the kind of rebuild started there. It's a company that I followed sort of right the way through from the original move from 2p, and then to come all the way back down to, you know, 4.5p, which was significantly less given the fact that there was a consolidation period as well. Was a real kind of task for any investor to be able to see the value. I met with James, with Luca Medeu. They had Stefania was working with the company back then. Leo Spitz. There was a team of them that come in to the city. We had a bit of a get together, a meet and greet. There was an all-bowl conference. James and his team came along to meet up with about 25-30 investors, and he had the decency to talk us through what the company intended on doing. They've since kind of deployed Luca out in North Africa and Morocco. They've taken on some what they believe to be extremely good assets. they've gone out, they've put the drill in the ground, and they've announced today that they've hit, is it 28-metre column of gas that has significantly exceeded their company's expectations. And I did send James an email this morning congratulating him on today's news, and I think he used two words in his response, and I won't quote it, but it was potential and enormous. So I think, you know, the first word, potential, suggested that there's still risk attached, and enormous would be suggestive of how big this find could be to the company. So yeah, yeah. It would seem that the developments in Morocco have certainly gone in the favour of the company. Luke, when I met him, was very charismatic, quite a typical Italian guy. We discussed one or two things in the business that perhaps I wasn't happy with at that point in time. Luke was animated, I was quite animated, and I could sense there was a great deal of passion there. You know, as I say, we fast forward a couple of years, he's deployed himself out into North Africa, and he's gone and done exactly what he said he would do, and that was to develop and find assets that would exponentially expand the size of this company. They were trading at about £15 million market cap, but about £130-140 million today. So hats off to Luca Medeu, to James Parsons and the rest of the team. I know that Stefani has moved on since then, but she was pivotal in helping raise the kind of profile of that company. So fair play to them all. They've done a great job. And I think it's a testament to the board that is in place now. It was originally an old fuddy-duddy board. When Rab went under, there was all of these kind of old grey-haired, wispy old blokes on the board, and it didn't seem to have a great deal of energy. I think James and has brought in strategic people and really put a kind of pragmatic team together, and it's paying dividends.
Yeah, well, look, since March, it's been trading below, like, 18 pence. And even on the 1st of July, it was 17 pence. And then the release of two positive RNSs, one last week, saying it won't need equity dilution to fund the infrastructure of the mine, and this today. And it's now...
It's not a mine, I think it's a gas field.
And they spiked at 29 pence today, but they come back about 27.25. So it's still worth putting on the watch list. But, you know, I wouldn't invest at this level because it spiked so crazily last few trading days. It's gone nuts. So, it's good to have on your watch list, definitely. Marvellous, Doc. Thank you very much. Speak soon, fella.
Take care. Thanks, mate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
On the podcast right now, joining me is the Mad Stork, private investor there. How's it going, fella? You all right?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad.
So, what's your feeling? We've had a bit of a sell-off, and then it's bounced back, bigger than the sell-off. What's your feeling at the moment in the markets? Because I know you're pretty pessimistic coming into this, and you held a bit of cash. What are your thoughts now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think people that follow me on Twitter will know my views on what's happened. I think it's going to be extremely bad for the UK economy. Now, the reason, obviously, that the FTSE is up is that a weak pound is good for a lot of FTSE companies, because the majority of their sales are outside the UK. And then when those sales are translated back into pounds, weak pound, means that their profits go up. But yeah, you know, in dollar terms, the FTSE 100's down, 10%, and the 250, which is a better indication of sort of UK focused, in dollar terms, is down, 20%. And you have to look at the pound. I mean, the pound is the market's judgment on the UK economy, and it's going down. So
yeah, well, I think we're at 31-year lows.
Well, so I mean, it got to 105 in 1985. And I think unless someone takes charge, there's proper leadership and less uncertainty, then we could well see those that again.
Isn't that just a case of, isn't it at the moment, a lot of it is, it's hard to cut through the figures from the sentiment, isn't it? I mean, it's clouding our issues and judgment a bit because there's a lot of doom and gloom about around Brexit. But as yet, you know, I know, you know, people sort of panic and sentiment becomes real, you know, in the markets. But do you think once it settles down a bit, though, and we do get a Conservative leader and we sort ourselves out a little bit, do you think people will feel a bit more, you know, comfortable and confident?
I don't think the markets, AIM companies as well, the bottom line for a lot of these small cap, micro cap companies is not going to be affected at all by Brexit. In fact, you know, some of the ones that do make money do tend to, especially mining companies and oil companies, and they receive their revenue in dollars. So, you know, the price, and they're priced in pounds and pence, and so, you know, not only is their revenue going up in pound terms, their share price in pound terms is sort of relatively less in dollar terms. You see what I mean? So, I think that for a lot of these companies, you could actually see rises off the back of this. Now, that's entirely separate from what's going to happen to the UK economy, which I think is going to be extremely bad. But for the actual markets, for AIM and a lot of FTSE stocks, you know, I don't think it's actually going to be quite good.
Yeah, of course, a lot of AIM stocks don't have any revenue at all. So, their share prices are move on news, doesn't it, really, and sentiment and almost investor interest.
What you might find is that it became, it was already hard for a lot of these companies to raise money. And you might find that funds drop even further as people sort of get cold feet about investing in the market. Although, you know, as I say, I suspect that the actual impact on a lot of AIM firms, you know, especially resource companies whose commodities are priced in dollars, will be negligible, or it'll be good.
And I know you. I mean, you know, everyone got pulled into the the Brexit debate, and I know at some point I saw your tweet saying, "Right, listen, I've got to stop tweeting about this. Let's get back to stocks because you're almost engulfed by it." And I know that's
absolutely.
The point.
And
that's the whole country, isn't it? That's why it's affecting the market so much, and especially like the other day I was looking at the FTSE 100 was up by 0.3% at the end of the day. The FTSE 250 was down 2.2%. So it is,
yes,
you know, a marked contrast.
You know, it comes down to exposure to the UK.
Yeah. So it's taking that on board. I mean, I don't know what your exposure to cash was and stocks was last time, but has that increased or decreased or what?
I've actually bought. I've got less. I've got less pounds. Holding pounds at the moment is not a good idea. I think I mentioned I bought a load of dollars and Swiss francs before the referendum as a sort of hedge, and that's obviously worked out okay. And I shorted the pound on referendum night. So
yeah,
you know, I've done pretty well out of it. But
did well. So at what level did you start shorting? Because I don't know if you were watching in the evening. Obviously, it started going up. Everyone thought it's a done deal for Remain. It was up to $1.5 a dollar, and then and all of a sudden, with the first results come in from Sunderland, I think, and it started going. So where did you start shorting?
I thought I'll, because I was sure it was going to be. I was sure it was going to be a Remain result, but I thought I'll stay up for the Sunderland result, then I'll go to bed. And then the Sunderland result come in, and the pound immediately dropped 5 cents, like instantly against the dollar, and it bounced back a bit. The Newcastle result was only a very very close win for Remain, and I started thinking shit. So, apologies for that language. And so, I thought I'll put big shorts on because I don't want it. I obviously wanted it to be a Remain result, you know, quite badly. But I thought, you know, if it is going to be a horrible result, I may as well make some money off of it. So, you know, I put in big shorts, and the margin for IG, and I assume it was the same for a lot of providers, was massive. So I wasn't able to put on as big of a short as I potentially could have done. But I did end up, you know, I shorted from about 145. I've only just closed the majority of those at sort of 130, although I think it probably will go lower. So, you know, I've made, you know, 1,500 points.
More
or less. You know, at X amount of points. So, you know, me personally, I've done very well. But I think I'm in, you know, the only people who are going to do well out of this are going to be currency speculators and people who are trained trade negotiators, because we're going to need a lot of those.
Okay, so
everyone else is going to do badly.
Yeah, okay, so what are you long and strong on then, stocks wise what are you still holding that you think still has, you know, upside potential?
Well, I've gold stocks, definitely, as you know, there's been a flight to safety, and I think that'll continue. I'm still holding.
So what gold stocks do you have?
I'm still holding KEFI, although I have reduced that a bit, because I think you know, they do need to do another placing. But as soon as that's out of the way, I think KEFI, as I've said before, is one of the best stories out there, and it only gets better when you consider you know, what the rising gold price will do. Petropavlovsk, which hasn't moved at all, really.
That's bad. Is that bad? If you've seen this kind of ramp up in the gold price and the gold stock hasn't moved, is that not a good sign, or do you think it's just lagging?
Well, I mean, Goldman Sachs were selling some shares, and you've got various uncertainties around Russian deals, but really, I mean, Petropavlovsk is so leveraged, and a rising gold price should have such a big impact on the bottom line that really it ought to have gone up a lot more, and I'm hoping it will. Randgold as well, bought back into there, although, you know, I do think Randgold is getting a bit ahead of itself.
£95 quid, is it? Yeah,
ridiculous. Yeah, it's up, heading to 100, which, you know, PPE, even with the rising gold prices, is that's pricing in a lot of optimism. What else have I got? Norikon Gold, which I took the recent placing for Norikon Gold, production in Q3, and they've got this new. This new resource they've acquired, placing. Mm-hmm. I think that'll do well. Obviously, you know, it's not gold, but I am. My biggest holding is Canadian Overseas Petroleum, which we'll see on yesterday. Just confirmed what I already knew, that it's a very good story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think people should, you know, listen to the podcast. Arthur, the CEO and the president there, was, he's an accomplished man, you know. And like I said, the only thing that went wrong last time was the Royal Bank of Scotland and the financial crash. But he's very good at finding oil, you know. And like you said, he's got this deal going with ExxonMobil there in Liberia. And he's got things happening in Nigeria. And I think, you know, considering they're a market cap of 20 million, and they have what net at the Liberia alone 450 million barrels, you know, prospective resources there. You can see the potential upside if that comes true, you know.
Absolutely, and you know, Exxon have spent so much time and so much money on this, and they clearly think it's a brilliant prospect. And also recently, I mentioned when I was on before the way it's linked to their recent discovery in Guyana. Mm-hmm. And the one of the appraisal wells they've been drilling since then has hit as well. So you know, that's linked tectonically to the to their Liberia prospect, which couple are in.
Yeah.
So I just think that the Exxon are just getting more and more confident about this, and then they're negotiating the drill contract at the moment. I'm sure we'll be here shortly, as Arthur said, and I think that'll get the ball rolling. And yeah, very, very excited.
Marvellous. So are you, what's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Have you, 5 stocks I've got there. You got any more?
Yeah, I've been buying dollar yielding FTSE stocks. So BHP Billiton, British American Tobacco. I bought, I know it pays in euros, but I bought Royal Dutch Shell as well recently, although that is looking overbought at the moment.
Yeah, it is a little bit. Yeah, cool. All right, marvellous stuff. Well, listen, thanks for coming on. And let's hope we have some good news from some of those companies, including Coppel, which I hold some shares in, thanks to you there and Bell pointing out for me. So soon, fella.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, it's time for today's suggested penny stock with potential. And it's suggested today by Terry G. Yeah, boy! Thor Mining is what Terry's suggesting. The company explores tungsten, and it's in development, exploration and development company. And it says tungsten is expected to perform very strongly over the next few years. How many shares does the company have in issue? 5 billion. What's the current price of market cap? 1.7 market cap. 0.03 pence per share. How much cash or debt does the company have? Cash near market cap value. Please do your own research. Recently paid off any or all company debt. There's 3 reasons why you think the company has potential. Number one, reason one, Molly Hill Tungsten Project is worth £40 million versus current market cap of £1.7 million. They've also just sold their Spring Hill Gold Project in Northern Territory of Australia. They've received cash proceeds of $2 million Aussie dollars and are owed $1.5 million. In addition, following completion of the acquisition, PC Gold will pay Thor a royalty of $6, that's Aussie dollars, per ounce of gold produced from Spring Hill tenements, where the gold is sold for up to $1,500, that's Australian bucks per ounce, and $14 per ounce if the gold is sold over that amount. Reason two, Metal Tiger have taken a strategic 8% stake recently. And three, operating in good jurisdiction in Australia and Nevada, USA. So that's Thor Mining, THR ticker. Please do your own research, suggested by Terry G. By all means, get involved here if you want. If you know of a stock, a penny stock with potential, and you want to give it the air of publicity, then just click the link here at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click the blog there, you'll see one of mine, and there's a link there. Fill in the form, takes about 5 minutes max, and I will give it that publicity. Okay, let's look at the broker buys and sells today. Buys, Cantor Fitzgerald has upgraded Gooch and Housego to buy, price target £9.70. FinCap has initiated coverage of Fulcrum Utility Services with a buy rating, price target 50 pence. And Deutsche Bank has initiated coverage of John Wood Group, buy rating, price target £8. Sells or downgrades here, JP Morgan Cazenove has downgraded HSS Hire Group to underweight, price target of 70 pence. That's it for the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.